AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Welcome to today's deep dive. We're going to be talking about the 2008 financial crisis and its lasting impacts.
Yeah, you know those ripples everyone was talking about?
Right.
Well, this Bloomberg article we're looking at today, it argues those ripples, they might actually be turning into a tidal wave.
Oh, wow.
And one that looks a lot like something right out of a history book.
Okay. I'm intrigued. Lay it on me.
Mercantilism.
Oh, mercantilism.
Yeah.
So like back to the 17th century.
That's what the article's suggesting, yeah.
So essentially governments intervening in the economy, trying to boost their own power and wealth, maybe even at the expense of other nations.
Exactly.
But that was centuries ago. Could that really be making a comeback in the 21st century?
Well, that's what we're going to try to figure out in this deep dive. It's a pretty fascinating argument. The article argues that these major economic crises, they've historically been the catalysts for creating entirely new economic systems.
So like when the world gets shaken up so badly, the old ways just don't cut it anymore?
Right.
Like the Great Depression?
Exactly. That's one of their prime examples.
Yeah.
You had that huge shift away from laissez-faire capitalism, and then boom,
yeah.
Keynesian economics takes center stage.
And then in the 1970s.
Oh, yeah. Stagflation hit.
Nasty business.
And the pendulum swung back the other way towards free market globalization.
With figures like Reagan and Thatcher leading the charge.
So you look at that historical pattern and then you look at the 2008 crisis. It really makes you wonder, are we on the verge of another one of those fundamental shifts?
Makes you think. So, okay, getting into the article, it talks about how the response to the 2008 crisis, specifically during the Obama years, was a bit hesitant.
Yeah.
And the article argues that this hesitancy actually played a role in fueling public distrust, which eventually made it easier for someone like Trump to gain traction.
Yeah, it created this environment where people were more susceptible to that kind of message.
Because they felt like the system wasn't working for them. And the article highlights a few decisions that contributed to this sentiment, like not nationalizing the banks or really holding those big players accountable for the whole meltdown.
It left people feeling like the system was rigged.
In favor of the elites.
Exactly. And that eroded public trust in the whole idea of free markets.
And then it gets really interesting because despite all the talk about limited government, you know, the Tea Party and all that.
Right.
Trump actually went in the opposite direction.
Increased spending.
Enacted protectionist policies.
And ballooned the deficit.
Talk about mixed messages.
Yeah, the article points this out as a signal that we might be breaking away from that free market consensus that's been so dominant for decades.
Instead, we're potentially seeing a shift towards a more hands-on nationalist approach.
What some might call
a new era of mercantilism.
Exactly. And the article lays out a bunch of examples to support this idea.
Like what? Give us some specifics.
Well, you've got Trump's trade wars, for one, and then Biden doubling down on those protectionist policies.
Right.
And then look at Xi Jinping over in China. He's tightening the reins of state control.
So it's not just an American thing?
Nope. The article makes a compelling case that this is a global trend.
Wow.
They even point to the rise of populist and interventionist governments in places like India, Turkey, Brazil.
So this is like economic nationalism on a global scale.
Seems like it.
Okay. But it's not just happening at the government level. The article also talks about how this mercantilist thinking is seeping into the corporate world.
Oh, yeah. Especially with all the debate around ESG investing.
Environmental, social, and governance.
Right. Remember how ESG was initially hailed as this way to reform capitalism from within?
Encouraging businesses to think beyond just profits and consider their broader impact.
Yeah, it was all about stakeholders and the planet.
Seemed like a pretty noble goal.
It did. But then, as the article points out, ESG started getting demonized, particularly in the U.S.
People calling it government overreach.
Saying it was a threat to shareholder value.
So a lot of pushback.
Yeah, for sure. And then the article highlights this really interesting anecdote about BlackRock.
The world's biggest asset manager.
That's the one. And the state of Louisiana.
Okay. I'm listening.
So this story, it really highlights the tension that's brewing between these ESG principles and this rising tide of economic nationalism.
Okay. So what happened?
Well, Louisiana decided to pull its investments from BlackRock.
Because BlackRock invests so heavily in fossil fuels.
You'd think that, right?
Yeah.
But that wasn't the main reason.
Really?
It was actually BlackRock's ESG policies that Louisiana had a problem with.
Interesting.
The state saw those policies as actually undermining its own economic interests.
Oh, wow.
To really drive home their point, the article quotes a letter from Louisiana Treasurer John Schroeder to BlackRock CEO Larry Fink.
Okay.
And Schroeder basically says, look, Louisiana has the right to use this money to further its own interests.
Even if it means missing out on maximum returns.
Exactly. It's a pretty bold statement.
It really highlights how this thinking is shifting.
Yeah.
National economic interests are taking center stage.
Even over maximizing profits.
It's like a complete 180 from how a lot of investors think.
It is. And it's a stark contrast to the approach of a place like Norway's sovereign wealth fund.
Okay, how so?
Well, they deliberately avoid investing in Norway itself or in fossil fuels.
Just spread the risk.
Exactly. Classic free market strategy.
So it's like two completely different philosophies clashing head on.
You got it.
On one hand, you've got the traditional focus on profits, even if it means supporting industries that might be harmful in the long run.
Right.
And on the other, you've got this emerging view that prioritizes national economic interests above all else.
Fascinating tension.
So this whole Louisiana BlackRock situation, it's more than just some financial spat, right?
It's symbolic of this much bigger shift that's happening in the world.
It makes you wonder if this is the direction we're headed in. Where does that leave us?
That is the big question, isn't it? And the article brings up some interesting historical parallels. It acknowledges that while mercantilism did help build empires in the past, it eventually gave way to free trade.
Which in the long run proved to be more beneficial.
At least for a while. So that begs the question, are we going to see history repeat itself in the 21st century?
Or are we entering a whole new era of mercantilism with its own unique set of challenges and consequences?
It's a question worth pondering. What do you think?
Yeah, it really does make you think. I mean, back then, things were so different. Nations could kind of just do their own thing.
Right, totally isolated.
But today, we're so interconnected, it's hard to imagine any country truly going it alone.
Absolutely. And you've got to factor in all the technological advancements.
Right.
Climate change.
Yeah.
These shifting geopolitical power dynamics.
Like a whole different world.
We're navigating uncharted waters here.
With a centuries-old map. Okay, so let's say this mercantilist comeback is actually happening. What are some of the potential consequences? What could it mean for everyday people?
Well, one thing we're likely to see is a continued rise in protectionist policies.
Meaning?
Higher prices for all those imported goods we rely on.
Oh, no.
Everything from clothes to electronics could get more expensive.
Ouch.
Not great for our wallets.
Yeah, that's not ideal. I'm also wondering about the impact on global trade. Could this shift towards economic nationalism lead to more friction, maybe even conflict between nations?
It's definitely a risk, yeah. Mm-hmm. As countries become more focused on their own economic self-interest, we could see a decline in international cooperation and a rise in trade disputes.
Leading to?
Well, it could disrupt those intricate global supply chains we've come to depend on.
And
the ripple effects on the world economy could be pretty significant.
So we could end up with a world that's more fragmented, more competitive, and potentially less stable.
It's certainly one possible scenario.
Not a very optimistic one.
It's not. But it's important to remember, there are potential upsides to economic nationalism, too. At least from the perspective of individual nations.
Okay. I'm listening. What's the other side of the coin here?
Well, one potential benefit is that focusing on domestic industries could lead to more jobs and economic growth within a country's borders.
Okay, that makes sense.
This could be particularly appealing in regions that have been hit hard by globalization and outsourcing.
Right, where jobs have been lost to overseas competition. So it's a trade-off.
You'd say that, yeah.
A double-edged sword. On one hand, you might protect domestic industries and create jobs, but on the other, you risk sparking trade wars and maybe even destabilizing the global economy.
Exactly. It's a delicate balancing act. And it's really hard to predict how this new era of mercantilism, if that's what we're entering, will ultimately play out.
One thing that really struck me in the article was how this mercantilist mindset isn't just influencing government policies, but it's also seeping into corporate behavior.
Oh, absolutely. That BlackRock Louisiana case really highlights that.
It makes you think about the role of corporations in all of this.
Right. Are they just pawns in this big geopolitical chess game? or do they actually have the power to shape the rules?
It's like a philosophical question, but with very real-world consequences.
Absolutely.
The article seems to suggest that governments are becoming more assertive in using their influence over corporations to achieve their goals.
Whether those are economic or political goals.
Right, but doesn't that risk stifling innovation?
Potentially.
And hindering companies from competing globally?
It's a valid concern. And it's one of the reasons why this whole shift towards economic nationalism is so fascinating. And to be honest, a bit unsettling.
Unsettling how?
We're seeing this clash between competing ideologies and interests, and the outcome is far from certain.
It feels like we're at a crossroads.
I think that's a fair assessment.
Like the choices we make in the next few years will have a huge impact on the future of globalization, capitalism, the world as we know it.
The stakes are incredibly high.
So if this new wave of mercantilism does take hold, what advice would you give to someone who's trying to navigate this increasingly complex world? How do we even begin to make sense of it all?
I think the most important thing is to stay informed and engaged.
Okay.
We need to understand what's happening and how it might impact us.
Knowledge is power, right?
Exactly. And don't be afraid to ask questions.
Yeah.
Challenge assumptions.
Okay.
This new world order, if that's what we're heading towards, it's going to demand critical thinking and flexibility.
We can't just sit back and passively accept whatever happens.
Right.
So stay informed. Think critically. Be adaptable.
Got it.
Anything else?
Yes, and maybe most importantly, remember that we're not just passive bystanders in all of this.
What do you mean?
We have a voice. We have a responsibility to help shape the future we want to see.
I love that. So how do we do that? How do we make our voices heard and ensure that this new era, whatever it holds, is one that benefits everyone, not just a select few?
Well, we can start by supporting businesses and organizations that align with our values. We can vote for leaders who prioritize international cooperation and sustainable economic policies.
Those are good starting points.
They are. And I think it's also crucial to engage in respectful dialogue and debate.
Even with people who hold different views.
Exactly. We need to understand where they're coming from and try to find common ground.
It's about finding solutions that benefit everyone.
We're all in this together.
You know, this reminds me of something the article touched on, the historical ambiguity of mercantilism.
Yeah.
The article acknowledges that it wasn't all bad.
Right.
It had its successes, but it eventually gave way to a different system.
Free trade.
Which, as we've been discussing, also has its pros and cons.
Definitely not a black and white issue.
So are we destined to repeat this historical cycle? Will this new wave of mercantilism eventually run its course and be replaced by something else? Or is this time different?
That's the million-dollar question. And unfortunately, I don't have a crystal ball.
Right.
But I think it's safe to say that the world is in a state of flux, and the next few decades will be crucial in determining the path we take.
It's a bit daunting.
It is.
And also kind of exciting.
I think that's a healthy perspective to have.
Right. It's like we're living through this pivotal moment in history.
We have the power to shape the narrative.
Speaking of narratives, the article mentions this story about a migrant caravan that formed in Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
Hoping to reach the U.S. border before Trump's inauguration.
Right.
It really got me thinking about the human impact of all these global shifts.
Yeah, it's a powerful example of how individual lives and aspirations intersect with these broader geopolitical forces.
The article mentions this 23-year-old Venezuelan woman, Yetzeli Pena.
Right.
She was worried that getting into the U.S. would be much harder under the Trump administration.
It just shows how policy shifts can have such a profound impact on real people's lives.
It's easy to get caught up in the abstract theories and political debates, but we can't forget about the human element.
Absolutely.
This story also made me think about the future of migration.
In a world that's becoming more and more defined by economic nationalism.
Right.
It's a complex issue, but I think migration patterns will continue to be shaped by these larger forces.
We need to be mindful of that.
Absolutely.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground here, and I think it's time to start wrapping things up.
Sounds good.
We could probably talk about this for hours, but we want to be respectful of everyone's time.
I agree. It's been a fascinating conversation.
So let's try to distill some key takeaways for our listeners. What are the most important things you want them to remember from today?
I think the first takeaway is that we may be witnessing a significant shift away from the free market globalization that has dominated the world for the past few decades.
And this shift seems to be driven by a number of factors.
The 2008 financial crisis, disillusionment with capitalism, the rise of populist leaders around the world.
It's a complex mix.
It is. And this trend toward economic nationalism has clear echoes of 17th century mercantilism.
Emphasis on government intervention and national self-interest.
And while there are potential benefits to this approach,
protecting domestic industries, creating jobs,
there are also some serious risks.
Trade wars, geopolitical instability, a more fragmented global economy.
It's a gamble.
Absolutely. It's a complex issue with no easy answers, and the outcome is far from certain. But one thing is clear. We are at a historical turning point.
And the decisions we make in the next few years will have a huge impact on the future.
This isn't just about economics. It's about the future of our planet and the well-being of humanity.
That's a powerful message. It's a call to action for all of us to engage in this conversation and work together to shape a future that benefits everyone.
Well said.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, what's that one big question you hope our listeners will keep thinking about?
That's a good one. Well, you know, the article points out how mercantilism eventually gave way to free trade, right?
Right.
Historically, yeah.
But this time around, the world is a totally different ballgame. I mean, think about it. We're way more interconnected. Technology's transformed everything, and we're facing these huge, unprecedented challenges like climate change.
Yeah, that's true.
So the real question is, how's this new mercantilism going to play out in this 21st century world?
It's a question with no easy answer, which is why it's so interesting to think about, because it really highlights that history doesn't always repeat itself exactly. The future is still wide open.
I think that's a really good point. And I think it's important to remember that we're not just watching this happen. We can actually shape how things unfold.
So well said. Well, on that note, a huge thank you to you for joining us on this deep dive into the potential return of mercantilism. It's been a really thought-provoking conversation.
I've really enjoyed it.
And to our listeners, we hope this has sparked your curiosity and maybe even inspired you to do some more digging on your own. Keep asking those questions, keep exploring, and keep those minds engaged. We'll see you on our next deep dive.